Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Okay, so welcome to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 179. We're going to be talking about Dev Test Labs with Giles Davies. Today is Monday, May 22nd, and this is episode number 179. Got Russell here with me as well. Kale is, gallivanting somewhere around New York. And Sajit's in a customer meeting that he couldn't rearrange. Customers always come first, even though this is a lot of fun. Those do ultimately pay the bills. I guess let's get into some of the new stuff. Russell, anything in particular you want to mention to start with?
Hi, Evan. So I remember you guys were talking about Build fairly recently on the first episode, and I know you ran out of time, and there were some big bits that came out of it, and I think one of the things that's worthy of a mention was the talk about Azure IoT Edge. So I don't know if you caught up on this one, but it's quite an interesting concept. So the whole thing's about intelligent cloud and intelligent edge, and the fact that Azure now is kind of bleeding out from just being a cloud-based thing, and being able to power cognitive services or machine learning or stream analytics and all those good Azure cloud-based services, but being able to consume them on devices that are outside the cloud now as well. So it's all about taking the compute to where the data is for low latency type stuff and for earlier processing of that data. And what IoT Edge is a kind of a platform that allows you to distribute some of that Azure runtime onto those devices and have your workloads running out there. So it's a really interesting sort of next progression, next stage for Azure. So it's kind of going out and sleeping.
So this is like pushing. This is actually pushing some of the bits and the processing out to those edge devices as part of some local runtime then.
Yep, absolutely. So it's containerized, but it's a way of doing the deployment of these services like stream analytics and machine learning. But you're getting out there close to those devices that can react on the thing quicker. So some of the examples they showed at Build actually were things like health and safety in a construction site, where it was looking out using real-time video analytical processing, so using the cognitive services to identify objects and react on those things and do things without that having to feed all that live stream of images back to the cloud all the time.
You're
not getting all the latency you get with that. Yeah.
So it's probably some stripped-down functionality, but it pushes it closer, so now you're not having to kind of round-trip all the time as you go through everything. Cool.
Yeah, and the other use case for it is disconnected. So if you're doing something like maybe you've got a cruise ship that spends a lot of time out at sea and doesn't have constant satellite connectivity for high bandwidth stuff, but it's collecting a load of data from its IoT sensors and things like that, that's another case where you might want to run something like Azure Stack as your effectively your edge device that can then do stuff, do processing locally, but you can be running, you can run fairly large workloads on Azure Stack, but you might have other devices and things like serverless compute now with Azure Functions. There's a runtime that goes with that, so you can install that on a Windows 10 machine, assuming you've got the creators update. That runtime can get pushed out to those Windows 10 devices, and then Azure Functions can push jobs onto those machines as well. So it's taking Azure onto your Raspberry Pis and your Arduino boards, basically.
But it's like even extending the cloud. It's even cloudier.
I mean, there's a few new phrases. One is intelligent edge, which is what this is all about. And then you've got the IoT edge as the suite and the technology that enables you to build those modules. And that's third-party modules coming on there as well to integrate with existing IoT devices and things like that. We've got intelligent cloud, which is the intelligent bit is talking about the fact that, if you've got loads of data, then you've got artificial intelligence that you can apply to those things. And then the third phrase that came out was talking about the mesh, which is kind of like the connectivity between the cloud and the edge. So there's a few new phrases there that I thought I'd throw in for the podcast. And
that's cool. Totally, that's going to be one of those features or new things that's going to chew up several shows. as we look at pieces and parts of it. So
we've lined up a couple of people in June to come back and talk to us about IAT with some real life samples and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome, great. Yeah, the one that jumped out at me, because I, you know, if you remember prior to my switch to Azure Active Directory a few months ago, I was hanging out in the networking space, and we would regularly get customers in, you know, the Africa continent who were wanting to leverage our services, but that we didn't have any local data center. So, and connectivity was a little bit hit or miss depending on when they were going. You know, we announced last week, and I don't know if you, didn't look like you guys had covered it, but that we are going to have two data centers in Africa now. And we're actually the first cloud company to have data centers there, which is even better. But just having them there is going to really open up the local, you know, kind of that local to everybody mindset that we're really shooting for in Azure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big one. I think, you know, there's an awful lot of commerce goes on in South Africa. You've got, I think, one of the data centers in Joburg and the other one's in Cape Town. So I know a load of companies and big enterprises have been waiting for those to come along. So that's really great news. The problem in the past, I think, has always been about being able to offer SLAs on the communications and the comms links, like you say. But obviously we've solved that somehow. I guess plugging their own fiber in places.
Or some PM somewhere in Microsoft has a really important project ahead of them between now and then. So, cool. So anything else in particular you want to bring up?
So the M-series VMs were announced, I think, last week. So these are for running SAP HANA workloads. And the amazing thing. Yeah, so they start off at, I think, 3.5 terabyte RAM for a single instance. That can go up to 20 terabytes of RAM just for the one node. But it will support up to 60 terabytes in a deployment of for SAP HANA. So yeah, think of the consumption around that. That's a big one.
I mean, that to me is like the epitome of some of the scenarios we talk about in cloud, where when you need that kind of capacity, you need it, right? You know, if your workload is such that you need to be able to run SAP, you know, in a HANA type environment, you absolutely need it. But maybe you don't need it at that scale every day of every month of every year, right? You know, maybe you need it at the end of the month or, you know, once a quarter or whatever it is. But to be able to scale it up and then scale it back down, just awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. There were some other SKUs announced as well. I'm not sure if we covered these, but V3 of Series D and E. So those have got hyperthreaded cores, so you can nest VMs. So you've got nested hypervisors, basically. So you can put a VM inside a VM inside a VM.
and so forth.
And onwards. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about that is, you know, they demonstrated at Build, they demonstrated a virtual machine scale set going up to 1,000 nodes. So, you know, if you think about that with nested hypervisors and these sort of size large machines, you can almost lift and shift the data center, let alone a workload.
Yeah, I guess that's when I first heard about that was the one thing I kind of couldn't get my head wrapped around, why you would want to do that. And then it occurred to me that, well, probably because a lot of data centers are already doing, in essence, they have a workload virtualized on a bunch of Hyper-V servers. Well, rather than move individual servers, now they can move that, in essence, that host. Right onto the Azure space, so that's something else.
There are there are a couple of development scenarios as well that's useful for. So if you, I know we've been asked about this a couple of times recently. So for example, if you wanted to run Docker locally, so Docker for Windows on a Windows 10 dev box running in Azure, you need to nest the virtualization because let's say you're doing .NET core development for. Well, and you can deploy to a Linux container, then it actually runs up a Hyper-V Ubuntu image in Windows 10 that the containers then run in. So you've got that, you need that nesting. And the other one, I think, is possibly around some of the Xamarin tooling, that if you wanted to have a dev box in Azure, and you're going to run the emulators, which again, some of ours are Hyper-V.
The phone emulator used to be that way when I used to do some development and dev support. Yeah. That was one of the blockers there to doing that in Azure.
Yeah. So I would assume they're not necessarily the main scenarios, but they're certainly there's some that we've hit as well with people.
Yep. Okay. Great. No, that's cool. Well, let's actually use that as a good opportunity, Giles, to kind of flip over to you. You know, can you give us a brief introduction?
Yeah, sure. So, yes, Giles Davis. I work in the UK in the Visual Studio team that sits within DX, Developer Experience. And I'm basically, I'm a TSP, Technical Solutions Professional, that covers the dev tools. So what that means in practice is Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, and Visual Studio Team Services. The reality of that probably is that, I don't know, maybe 80% of what I cover is broadly DevOps with VSTS in reality. So how are we doing continuous integration, continuous deployment? Not necessarily, but with an increasing focus on Azure as well. So that's me, and so I cover all, not a particular sector, so I cover anyone that will listen to me in the UK.
I think that describes us all, right? Oh, you want to talk about Azure? Sure, I'm happy to talk about whatever the feature is.
Yeah.
So I guess you offered to come on today and talk about Dev Test Labs, and you know we've seen a bunch of new features, you know, come out for that. You know, maybe kind of give us a brief overview of, you know, what the service is, kind of what the core use case is, and then what
people
do.
And I should say thank you for inviting me on. So this came out of a conversation a while ago with Russell. So, so I work mainly in that sort of development space with customers. But the Dev Test Labs, I think, are a really interesting service. So, as I say, a bit of a background, if you're not aware of what they are, the way I'd describe it really is that it's really offering two main capabilities. One, from the perspective of the user, is that it's about very easy, fast, self-service provisioning. And that's going to be, as the name suggests, typically for dev or test environments. And the flip side of that coin is that whilst you want that to be as easy as possible for individuals to create the environments they need, you also, from an organizational point of view, want to be able to control that and manage it in a sensible way. And so for me, the analogy would be, I'm sure, you know, on premise, everyone's very familiar with, you know, working with virtual machines. And over time, as that sort of matured, I think one of the classic problems is that you end up with sort of VM sprawl. Everyone's, you know, every bit of hardware everywhere is running VMs. You don't know which ones you can turn off and aren't being used. If you need a new one, have we got enough hardware? And so you've got that sort of an analogy of, it's a little bit out of control. And we're probably not making the most efficient use of our infrastructure. And I think at that high level, to me, Azure Dev Test Labs is really about putting that level of control around your use of environments in Azure so that you are in control of that and you're not wasting the infrastructure. And of course, in the cloud, you only pay for what you use. And the flip side of that is don't pay for what you're not using. So stop it, get rid of it, delete it, whatever you need to do. But if you're not using it, you don't need to pay for it. And so it gives you a sort of framework for doing that. So that's kind of how I think of it at a high level.
Yeah, and this so sounds like... go ahead, Russell.
No, it's all right. I was just wondering if it included some sort of governance. So are there sort of rules and regulations in place that enforce that kind of usage? So if I wanted my team only to be able to use it within certain hours
absolutely.
So a number of hours.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you if we look at this from the admin side, if you like. So first of all, there is role-based access control, so you can define who can access a lab. And then within that, you can absolutely set those policies. So a clear example for that is auto shutdown. So if you know that for this particular lab, we are unlikely to need it overnight and at weekends, then you can put that in and make sure it shuts down. You can also have auto startup. So it could be that it shuts down at whatever, 7 o'clock at night, and it restarts 7 in the morning, so it's available for people when they get in. So you can put those sort of policies around it. Absolutely.
I gotta say, by the way, the auto shutdown is probably my most favorite feature of Dev Test Labs that has migrated out of Dev Test Labs and into kind of the general Azure infrastructure, because now with any ARM VM, that functionality is there. I know a lot of the folks that I work with, they just turn that on by default because they're usually spinning up machines to test scenarios or you know, reproduce customer environments. And that was the problem before, is you always got to remember to go turn them off.
Absolutely. I have that. I mean, it's not, obviously, this is not what it's designed for, but in my role, then I'm quite frequently demonstrating stuff to customers, and then I'll jump in the car or train or whatever and head off. And I've done that. You know, you suddenly realise hours later, oops, I've left.
I left that G5. I've left everything running. The weekend, right?
So I'm trying to make it so it's not why it's there, yeah. But I'm trying to use DevTest Labs to control my own environments because I know that I can forget and, yeah, exactly. I can forget it's shut down and I can remember a couple of days later and it's not a problem.
Yeah, so the one problem
there's a decent mobile app for that now.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, it came out as part of Build last week, actually. Actually, I haven't had a chance to see it myself, but it looks pretty cool.
It's really good for just starting and stopping VMs, actually.
It's the, excuse me, honey, I have to go stop this VM. Otherwise, I'll get yelled at tomorrow. I used to be in consulting and, you know, doing a lot of custom app development for customers. And one of the problems that we used to run into was you'd build this kind of build test environment for customer blah, and it was always a nightmare to make sure that, you know, everything always got reset back to the way that it was supposed to be. And we used, you know, virtualization and snapshots, but, you know, it was always kind of kludgy. Does DevTest Labs kind of help with that scenario as well? Is it not only allow me to kind of manage the existence of these resources, but the state of these resources as well?
To some extent, it's more about the. I think it's more about the recreation of those. So your starting point is essentially two main ways in to build up a list of the environments that a user can create in the lab. Mm-hmm. And you'll start with a base, and that base will be or can include the library of virtual machine images in Azure, and you can choose which ones can and can't be in there. You can also add your own, and you can create images from your own machines or environments that are running. But I think the other very interesting area is that you can create your own repositories with ARM templates. So these don't have to be, first of all, they don't have to be single environments, so it doesn't just have to be a box, but in fact you can say I'll have one of those, and it's whatever you can put in an ARM template. So it could be a sophisticated environment with, you know, multiple machines or network storage or whatever it might be. So I think principally it's really about being able to recreate that. But once as a user, when you come in and say I'd like to add in a new machine into my lab, you're choosing from any of those, and then having started that, it is just an environment that's running in Azure, so you can then stop it or not, or subject to the auto stop. So you get the continuity of using that environment, but I think it's probably better, you know, longer term, is to say, actually, I can just get rid of that and we'll recreate it from a template of some description.
Yeah, no, that sounds perfect.
Is there a way to sort of see databases? Is there some kind of workflow that starts and kicks off when the lab gets first initialized?
In what sense? So you can see there is...
Say your environment contains a SQL Server, or maybe you're going to use the PaaS version of that, but you've got a web app, and you know that you need a schema that's got certain users with passwords in it or something like that, or you need some sort of reference data in there. Is there some kind of sort of entry point that runs when the Dev Test Lab start up that says, okay, it's the first time it started, therefore I need to go and initialize this database and seed it with some data?
So there isn't that I'm aware of. There's no specific way of doing that, but what you do have is when you're creating these bases, you can add in artifacts, and there's a repository of artifacts that you can add to and create your own, and those artifacts can include running scripts, for example. Some of them are a lot of them actually are around chocolatey installs, so you can say actually using, you don't need to specify that, but if I add, well, you know, maybe for a dev machine, maybe I want Visual Studio Code installed, I want Selenium drivers, you know, etc. I want these extra browsers installed. So you can select all of that. So when you say I want one of these, it's not just, let's say, a Visual Studio 2017 Windows 10 image, but it's that plus these artifacts on top of that. But you can also include scripts in there. So you can say, go and get this script from this source and then execute it, so PowerShell or something like that. So there isn't as far as I'm aware, there's no, you know, button or option to do that, but I think you could achieve that through those sort of mechanisms.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So it's like VM extensions do a similar kind of job, don't they, when they start up? So you kind of talked about labs that environments that are there, and they sound fairly static, although you can schedule them and you can have them shut down and what have you. Is there any way, or is it a use case for dev test labs that, that you spin them up as part of a CI/CD build, for example, or some pipeline whereby it gets spun up and then shut down at the end of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are so you can access the functionality. There's an API, but if you're using something like Visual Studio Team Services, there are tasks in the marketplace, so you won't see them by default. But you can just go and add them, and then you can access this dev test functionality, dev test lab functionality within, say, the release, perhaps if that was the right place to do it for you. So yes, absolutely. So I think you where you had something like a yeah, maybe I'm going to go from dev to test to pre-prod to prod or something. That kind of flow. Okay. When you came to the test environment, you could say actually the first task is spin it up in Azure Dev Test Labs. Once that's happened, then deploy this, run these tests, leave it available for manual testing, that kind of thing. So yes, absolutely, you can integrate it within that flow.
So what's the and I think you may have, some of the stuff you just talked about is probably the part that I was missing, but, you know, when we talk about deploying from ARM templates, you know, I mean, like, I can go deploy from an ARM template with a couple of clicks. What is that what Dev Test Labs brings on top of the ARM, you know, or the benefit it brings above and beyond just deploying an ARM template, is the ability to kind of tie this into, you know, doing, you know, wiring it up against my tests and running a bunch of, you know, tests on it when it first spins up, and then, like, is that kind of that sweet spot for it?
No, actually, I would say it's going back to that rather than you having to, as an end user, rather than you having to run the ARM script, is that you don't need to have that level of involvement or perhaps permissions either, and that it's being whatever that ARM template creates is being created in the context of this lab, so you've got permissions into it, you've got that governance around it.
Gotcha.
So I think it's more that it's being created. I agree with you. I think if you've got permissions and you have the access and the skills, then probably you can spin up your own environment as easily. But what you haven't got then is all of that sort of organizational control around it, where actually it was an approved ARM template that we're happy with you spinning up, and that you have permission to do it, and that you can't use. What I haven't talked about is that there's various policies you can put around. Let's say if you're creating a VM, that it can't be. You can choose which size machine it's going to be. Any of these from this list, or pick and choose, or can you use premium disks or not, etc. There's a whole load of policies to put in.
So again, that's the governance, right, that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not really going to. That's the kind of the sweet spot, which is tells me what I can and can't do. Not really, you know, if I have, you know, admin privileges to an account, I can create kind of whatever I want.
Absolutely.
But now that's sitting underneath my subscription, and it's not kind of a controlled resource.
Yeah. And you can delegate that out effectively to the dev test lab and say, you know, you're allowed to come in here, and I'm going to tell you what you can and can't do within that lab. And you can also, the other aspect that I think is interesting from the organization's point of view, is that you can monitor the resource consumption around that as well. So you can look at the cost of the lab. You can set up alerts. So you can say, you know, I want this lab to cost no more than, you know, I don't know, say $1,000 a month or $1,000 over this period of time, and tell me when I've hit 50%, 75%, 100% of that value. So you can put some monetary controls around that as well and say, I don't want this to be costing us this much.
I don't want to find out at the end of the month that Russell has run a G5. You know,
exactly.
Always yes. On deployment for a month, right?
Yeah, and then got on holiday as well.
I don't use the G series since the M series came out. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, because absolutely, that is. You know, I've been in this space for a long time, and that is the one kind of constant is you're always okay. What did I create? What did I provision? You know, did I create the expensive version of it? Do I need to delete it tonight? I actually just got an email this morning, which I didn't mention earlier, but it's a new feature that I guess we've rolled out in the VPN space, where it said, hey, this gateway hasn't had any traffic in more than 45 days, or maybe you ought to go delete it. But it's about avoiding those kind of scenarios, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Awesome.
The other thing, so not related to that, but the other thing I was just thinking in terms of scenarios is that sort of other areas that you can potentially use this is, and we see it being used, is not only for, well, I suppose to go through them, I would say, you know, one is to provision things like developer machines. So I want to develop a desktop and use the flow we've talked about to make sure you can access an appropriate machine and its shutdowns or not as appropriate. Obviously test environments, so I want to spin up a test environment. But other areas that are interesting, I think, are perhaps around things like training and educational type scenarios, maybe within an organization, and also things like hacks or POCs, that kind of thing. We can say, actually, again, we could create here's the environment, whatever it looks like, and we're going to let you have access to it, but with controls around it. So we understand the sort of shape and size of that. And there are some brand new features that help with that. So, for example, you can now create identical virtual machines in a batch. So when you create a virtual machine, you can also say, and I'd like to have 10 of these or whatever, and therefore you can leave a pool and leave it for people to claim them. So you could say here, maybe let's say a training environment, you might say, let's create 20 virtual machines which have whatever it is, you know, whatever is going to be a development environment or something. As people come into the training class or environment or whatever it happens to be, they can go into Dev Test Labs and say, I'd like to claim one of those VMs. And there's a pool of claimable VMs, for example, and they can just grab one, and then that obviously comes out of the pool, but is subject to all of those rules. So some other quite interesting little scenarios, I think, that it can potentially support.
So in that scenario, if they're in the pool but not being claimed, are you still paying for them at that point? Have they actually been provisioned, or are they?
Yes, you are. Like a slot? No, yeah, and actually that's probably a good, if I can expand that out into this more general thing as well, is so the Dev Test Lab is a free service, so you don't pay anything. There's no extra cost for using Dev Test Lab. However, to be clear, you're still paying for whatever it is you're creating. So whatever it is you're doing in Azure, this is just putting the wrapper of that kind of control and governance around it. So yes, if you are creating VMs, for example, you'll be paying for them in the same way if they're not running just the storage, if they're running compute and storage, etc. So it doesn't give you, only because I know we've had this as somebody's gone, aha, does that mean I get free, do I get free VMs or something within the Dev Test Lab? You don't. But so it's the normal Azure pricing applies, but you're not paying anything for this service around it.
But again, it sounds like you're getting that governance of, I only want, I don't know, 10 of these machines ever to be able to create it at one time by my group of people.
Absolutely, yeah.
This work. I don't want to pay for them until they need them, but I also don't want 11.
Yes, exactly. And you can also, something else that's new is you can also put auto expiration on as well. So after 30 days, they get deleted as well, you know, something like that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Nice.
So it's one last question from me then, I think. Just when I've been in and played with them in the past, there was all these words, and you've mentioned some of them. There's artifacts. Obviously, you've got your base VMs. And then formulas.
Yes, so a formula is where you're basically composing the, you take a base image typically plus artifacts, and that creates a formula. So for example, which is one I've set up for my own use, is I may take a base of one of the Visual Studio Windows public VM images, and then I'll add in the artifacts to turn it into a build agent. So I'll say install, there's an artifact which is install the VSTS build agent, and I mentioned before things like Selenium drivers. So I, by applying that to that base, that turns it into what I need for a build machine. This is my build machine, and yes, absolutely. From after that's then what I'm not doing is I'm not creating a new image. I'm just using the base plus supply some artifacts, but I can manipulate that afterwards as well.
Gotcha, makes sense. Great, thank you.
But you're right. It is slightly. It's some new terminology, isn't it, actually? So it's
just a bit different. I mean, it makes sense, but it's when you first go and look in there, it's all a bit strange.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is great. I mean, it sounds like, I think you probably hit it right on the head. It's all the ability to kind of set these rules around this use, right, versus kind of being wide open to everything. I think, Giles, you've hit on all my areas. I know a lot more about DevTest Labs than I did coming in. I actually thought I knew something, and apparently I did not. So now I do. Russell, do you have any other questions for Giles?
Well, just, I guess, is there anything coming that you know of that you can share with us in this area?
I don't actually. I mean, I'm not that close to it. It's just just something that I think is very useful, and when we talk to people about it, they tend to agree. So no, I don't have any particular insights, I'm afraid, in the future, but on its roadmap. But I think it's good. What I would say, if you, and I think your point around terminology, things like formulas and bases and artifacts and all that kind of thing, if you want to have a look at it, then there is some. I always say this with a note of surprise in my voice, but there's some good documentation. it is very consumable. So there's a shortcut. So if you go to aka.ms/dtl, then that will take you to the DevTest Lab pages. So you can search for it otherwise, but aka.ms/dtl, and there's all sorts of getting started documentation and how to and all that kind of stuff. So some good stuff there.
Just makes me want to ask, do we have a DevTest Lab for DevTest Labs? But that's like that Hyper-V on Hyper-V thing.
It is.
This was great, Giles. Thank you very much for coming on. I'm sure the audience is going to walk away with a lot more understanding and probably a lot more desire to go play with and use DevTest Labs than they had.
Yeah, and I would say that. Actually, play with it. So you should, regardless of how you got access to Azure, you'll find that you've got DevTest Labs in there. So everyone can go and play with it and see if it's useful for you.
Sounds great.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
We will be back next week, hopefully with the full gang at that point. Thanks, folks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.